Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod.
We want to give a huge shout out to today's sponsor, Two Rivers Bookstore, which is an independent bookstore in St. John, Oregon, but more on them later.
Hey!
How are you doing today, Jill?
It's been a little wild around here.
Yeah.
And I am not entirely sure that, like, I am going to make it through parenting teens.
Oh, no.
Like, it's fine.
It's got to be fine.
But man, I'm dying to tell you this.
Okay.
So yesterday, I got a little reminder email. Teen night at the pool, 7th, 8th, 9th graders, you know, incoming, blah, 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 starts at 7 o'clock. So I forwarded it to the kids and I was like, hey, this thing, thinking like, they'll either go or they won't.
Right.
And like, I'll drop them off and pick them up and fine.
Yeah.
So I don't hear anything about it all morning. No one even mentions it. It's like it's not even happening. I assume
that we're not going.
They're not into it.
Yeah.
I go and pick a child up from...
Please tell me it was one of your children.
It was one of my children. I'm sorry. I'm trying to use gender-neutral terms to not tell this person's business.
I just want to make sure you weren't bringing home a random child.
A random child.
Yeah.
I mean, not on this day.
Okay.
So I go to pick up one of the kids at their sport practice. And they walk out. You and I were on the phone.
Right.
And I was like, oh, here comes my kid. And they were walking with another child. And then they go to the other child's car. And they talk there for a couple minutes. And then my child, and that child's mother start walking to my car. And that's when I said to you, I don't know what's going on here.
Right.
I have to go. And that's, I think, the last time I talked to you yesterday, really.
Yes. About this, especially.
Yes. So they walk over. Child says to me, hey, I invited friend to teen night at the pool. Oh. I'm going, friend is going, sibling is going, other friend from the neighborhood is going, and like three other kids. I said, oh, okay, great.
Okay.
I introduce myself to friend's mom, and she's like, I'm going to drop friend off at your house.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's fine. That works. And then she said, how do we want to get everybody home? And I was like, who all are we talking about?
Right.
And that's when I find out I'm driving like five children to teen night, which, sidebar, I've decided is a giant compliment. Like,
oh, yeah,
when
absolutely.
They came with this plan, I was the driver.
Yep.
And I got to take my wins where I can get
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely.
In teenhood.
It's coveted.
So, yeah.
Congratulations.
So I was like, okay, no, fine. That's fine. I'll just pick everybody up and take everybody home. Like, that's fine.
Sure.
And I honestly meant it. I didn't care.
No, of course.
So everybody's great. We exchange contact information. Friend walks back to the car with their mom. I go with my child to the local t-shirt store because I'm working on something for PTO. A story for another day. I've been hoodwinked into being the middle school PTO president.
Hoodwinked is the perfect word for it.
Oh, it's more like the last person standing. Anyway, we go into the t-shirt shop, and this is like kind of the first time I had a chance to look at my child since I'd seen them in the morning.
Okay.
Like, I dropped them off at things earlier in the day, and then I had not been the afternoon carpool person.
Okay.
And I look at the kid, and I say, you look really nice. Like, your hair's all fixed with stuff in it, and you're not wearing head-to-toe athleisure.
Sure.
Even though you were just at a sport practice.
Right.
And you smell good.
I'm sorry. That's unusual.
Right? because I'm stupid, still nothing clicks in my brain. Oh, and child says to me, Dad said I had to comb my hair because he was tired of it being messy. And that seemed plausible. Yeah. So I accepted that explanation of the situation and moved on. I get home. I tell Mark this whole plan. He's like, okay, fine. Uh-huh. We get, well, first of all, before I say we get to the evening, because we are now almost 13, we had whole drama about what everyone is wearing.
Oh, at the pool?
What kind of swimsuit are you wearing? What kind of swimsuit is everyone else wearing?
Oh, not the fun years.
No. And like, you want to be cool, but they were going to get in the water. And you want to be comfortable, but you want to look cute.
Right.
And what do you do with your hair? And what kind of bag? And it was all coming, rushing back to me as to how, like, just getting ready to go to the teen night at the pool could take 2 hours, because it did.
And why, and now you understand why.
Right, exactly. Because there was, like, a full-on conference call on Google Chat Hangout. Really? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I guess, like, my version of that is I text my friends, like, what are you wearing? We text each other our photos.
Yes.
Wow.
It was, like, a full-blown thing. Only it's new, so we were having a lot of feelings about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was so caught off guard.
Yeah.
Like, the whole day, I just felt like, you know how they have that game where the people get in the human hamster ball, and then they end up, like, just being pummeled as they go down the hill? It felt like that, but with teen feelings.
Oh, my God.
Like, because it was just, I was not prepared.
No. To ever revisit that.
No. So, friend from the sport team gets dropped off, enters our home, and everything is weird and awkward.
Like, immediately?
Immediately.
Between friend and child?
Between friend and child and sibling. Like,
oh, got it.
So, I can't figure out what's going on. And then other friends come, and I go to drop them off, and I'm like, again, Mark and I are unpracticed at this.
Sure.
Mark goes, how did they have to pay to get in? And I was like, at the pool, remember? And he goes, oh, but it's a social. And I was like, shit. So I look that up. And yes. And
of course, oh, they did?
Yes. I didn't tell the other mom. So then Mark and I are like scouring the house for like cash money, of any kind. Because I don't.
Who cares cash anymore?
Right. Yeah. That was like a whole thing. I go to drop them off. And of course, I don't know how you don't have, like, PTSD to your own teen years as a teen parent. Because, like, there's all these little groups of people, and they're all standing outside, and nobody wants to walk in until their whole group is there.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, it's like a whole thing. So we drop them off. I get back up here, and I am setting up because you and I had an interview scheduled. And my phone just ping, 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 ping. And I look down and one of the kids is just having a total meltdown about their swimsuit choice. And it was not the correct choice in their opinion. Oh. Can I bring them a change of clothes? And I was just like feeling so tired. And
yes.
Like, I was just like, Jesus Christ.
Just wear the fucking suit.
Just like, get out of this house. Like, what is going on? Oh my God. And then I was like, no, 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 no. Remember what it's like to be 13.
Yes.
And feel like your parents didn't get you.
Yes.
And they didn't understand the things that were important to you. And if this child is blowing up my phone about the clothes, it's because the clothes are important to them.
Yeah. Oh, good for you, Jill.
And I need to like see that. Thank you, therapy. So I run other clothes down there. I get back here and Mark comes down from putting the little kids to bed and he's like, so was it weird? And I go, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, clearly like child has a crush on friend. And I was like,
wow.
I'm the last one to the party. And Mark goes, and clearly child told sibling.
Right.
And because everyone was acting weird. And I was like.
But so you at least clocked the weirdness.
I did. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, that explains so much.
Everything.
Yeah. So child and friend We have a three-row car, of course, because that's how I roll in life. And I picked up all the kids. But, of course, they were the first ones in. And when they went to go get in the car before I dropped them off, it was this whole weird thing about how we'll go to the back since we're the first ones in.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, right, right.
So there was like a mini date happening in the third row of my car. And then when we picked them up at the end of the night, it was like, it was so weird. I will just say, 13-year-old flirting is so awkward to overhear.
Oh, no.
And also adorable.
Yeah, sure.
And also so many selfies were taken in the back of my car. With, like, they were all – and then they also made a TikTok. Life is super, super weird right now. And I need – I don't even know. I need a minute.
Yes.
I feel like one day I had – a child, and now I have a hormone emotion machine.
times two.
And whoa.
I hate to say this, but like, it's just gonna get worse.
I know. Yeah. I know. But now I'm hoping, now that I've done it once, I at least like can roll with it.
Yes. I love that you weren't clocking that.
No, no. I mean, the shower in the middle of the day, the new hairdo, the different clothes, just to go to the practice where the person was going to be.
Yes, absolutely.
I missed all of that.
And then you're just like, you look nice and sound and smell nice. And and your husband's like, it's because crushes are happening.
Right. I was like, oh.
It's not for us. Got it.
Oh, got it. Yeah.
It's a little bit like how you were the last to the party to realize who the narrator was in Less.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It was.
Although that was intentional, I think. Like you don't want to find out. You want to know what's happening here.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I clearly, I'm just going to be the last to arrive, and that's fine.
You do have the coveted spot of
being allowed to drive the 13-year-olds.
You've got the three rows, baby. It's valuable. Valuable real estate.
Oh,
thank
man.
You for sharing that with me. And wow, hats off to you for like keeping that as anonymous as possible.
Yeah, I really did.
Yeah, no, you did.
Yeah, so we'll see.
I keep almost ruining it because I happen to know who it's about.
Yes. Yeah, we'll have to talk about it more when we're not broadcasting it to the whole world.
Yeah, sorry, listener. You don't get everything.
So I feel like I need a gold star because I'm not recording today with a giant glass of wine.
Perfect.
That said, what are we talking about today?
Well, today we are continuing our tradition on Book It, which is our book club conversation. And we are talking all about our third book club pick, Revival Season by Monica West. Revival Season is Monica's debut novel. And when we saw the cover and the description, we knew immediately we wanted this to be our book club selection. And I'm just so excited to talk about this. This is, I think it encapsulates what we do on Book It, which is just gab about books. And it's so fun when it's a book that we've both read.
Yes, I think I said to you the other day, like, I was missing, it had just been a while since we had read the same book, and I was, like, missing that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because occasionally when we do, like, roundups, we truly try to keep it a secret from one another so that when we come to our conversation, it's a surprise. And so it's always so fun in those moments when, like, you say, oh, the next book on my list is this, and it happens to be one of my favorite books.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's just fun to read it next to you. Also to have to, like, temper our opinions because we want to save it for this type of thing. Yeah. So there's always these like wild and dramatic texts back and forth where just like, don't respond to this, but like the ending was wild, or don't respond to this, but chapter 24 made me cry, like that sort of thing.
Michael, we have a new featured indie bookstore this month.
I know, and I'm so excited. Two Rivers Books in St. John, Oregon. Did you see that they share a space with Weird Sisters Yarn?
Oh my gosh, I did. And I started following both of them on Instagram. They are at Two Rivers Books and at Weird Sisters Yarn. And I went down a complete rabbit hole looking at the pictures and reading their posts. They have really cool things happening. Lots of local music and artists. And their big anniversary party is coming up soon.
Yeah, I personally love their emphasis on community and community building. They have a really cool Patreon that they call a CSA for Books, Yarn. yarn and crafts, hashtag CSBYC. It helps them pay musicians and cover ongoing expenses, but the heart of it is community contributions, donations to local nonprofit organizations that's working in St. John.
That is so cool. We are obsessed with local. I hope everyone will check them out. Their website is tworiversbooks.com.
Jill, why don't you give our listeners a little synopsis about Revival Season?
Absolutely. This book covers a lot of ground, so I stole this synopsis from the publisher's website.
Perfect.
It is summer, and just like all summers, Miriam and her family are packing themselves in their old beat-up minivan, and they're going to travel around through the Southeast for Revival Season. And this time, this year, Miriam's dad, they're not sure what to expect because there was a shocking act of violence in the previous season. And her father, I guess, is very well known. Yeah. And, you know, there was a little bit of scuttlebutt about this incident, and it kind of casts a shadow over the upcoming summer. Mm-hmm. And so right from the start, Miriam is in this kind of uneasy place about the summer coming up. The book, that's where the book starts. And from there, we follow them on the most current revival circuit for the summer. And throughout the summer, some things happen that change the way Miriam views her dad. It alters her relationship with her mother and her sister also, but also her faith in God and her relationship with religion in general. And then partway through the book, it turns out she has a gift that is supposedly not possible for girls to have. And that also impacts all of the things that that were mentioned before. And ultimately, she's, I think, unsurprisingly kind of faced with a choice about what are you going to do?
Right.
What's the path forward?
Right.
That's Revival Season.
It's interesting that you said that, because listening to you explain it that way in terms of like, this is what it's about, and then this thing happens and it's also about that. I actually hadn't thought about it in those terms until you said that. The revelation of her father's violence in the past is where it begins, and it's also like what the book is about, while also her experiencing this thing that she knows she has, this gift. It's just a layer of the violence from her father's past, because violence is more than just physical violence. It's just it's lies and emotional abuse. And I hadn't thought about that layer to it, because on one hand it's both at the same time, and another hand it's two things at different times.
Yes.
Wow. Fiction is wild.
But then going a full 180, I mean, like, you and I read the synopsis and we were like, I want to get my hands on this book. And then I saw the cover because, you know, that's our thing. The cover's gorgeous.
Stunning. I mean, it's stunning. Have you seen it in a store?
I haven't.
It's gorgeous.
Is it?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it in the store yet, but I just love it's got like a beautiful sunset with like the dusky orange and like the inky blue and then the tent. And I love how they've placed the words up higher so that you can see the tent.
And just the perspective, like the tent is in the distance and we're seeing it as an observer. And I think at some point, Miriam, the character, kind of feels that way, because the reality of Revival Seasons is changing in her mind, and she's kind of trying to see it in a different way. I love this cover. It's one of my favorite covers this year.
Yeah, I agree.
I also think it was supposed to come out in May, or it was supposed to come out in June, but it came out in May. It came out early.
Oh, really?
I meant to ask her about that.
Oh.
Monica, why'd that happen?
I had not caught that it was her debut until we were talking to her yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, that detail just totally escaped me.
Late to the party again.
I know, always. It's a theme.
Kids flirting, writers writing. Okay, let's talk about everything we loved about this book.
This book sets out to do a lot.
Yeah.
the plot is permeated with conflict. And Miriam and her father and her mother and her mother and her father. Right. Her mother as a person. And her mother as just like a symbol, a stand-in for like women in general.
Yes.
In Southern evangelical circles. Her relationship with God, there's exploration of power and gender roles and abuse and unwanted pregnancy. There's grief and disability. There is a lot here.
Yeah.
And yet the situation feels, I feel like the family and the setup is totally authentic.
Yes. Because when you say it like that, I'm like, damn, it is a lot. But the way it's done is so intimate,
yeah,
and dialed in to Miriam, because she is the narrator. It's her story.
Mm-hmm.
That it never feels like a lot. It feels like a lot. I say that like with compassion towards Miriam. Like that's too much for one person. But as a reader, it never felt like, oh my God, another thing. It just flowed because it is her story.
I am curious. One of the first things I noticed was that Miriam, Caleb, and Hannah. So those are the three kids.
And in order, birth order.
And in birth order. And Isaiah and Isaac are all Old Testament names.
Yeah.
And I was thinking back to when we read the prophets and we talked to Robert Jones Jr.
Yeah.
And he likewise worked in a lot of biblical names and that carried a message into the text.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really curious about this. Like, I am a churchgoer and have a lifetime exposure to religion and with a period of complicated working out how I felt about things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I recognized the names. I remembered the stories. I was like, oh, huh, okay. But I'm just wondering if that translates for the average person.
Totally. It's funny that you mentioned that because my husband and I talk about this all the time because I grew up in a Jewish house and like we were practicing, but really casual.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh grew up in a really religious home. And in media, if something is a biblical reference, it often goes over my head.
Yeah.
Like we were watching the movie Mother for the first time when it came out. It's a very controversial film. And we really liked it. Immediately afterwards, he was telling me about like, well, it's clearly a retelling of Adam and Eve. And I was like, what? When? And then he was like, my understanding of Adam and Eve is very surface.
Gotcha.
And he was saying so much more about it that it just was lost on me, which didn't affect me in a negative way. I loved hearing him tell me about it. Like it enriched it for me. So all of the references to the Bible or any book of worship, it does tend to go over my head other than me recognizing that it's coming from the Bible.
Yeah.
And it's weird because I know it because of reading fiction. Like, mm-hmm. I did clock it in this, but it's because of books like The Prophets and books like – and other books that aren't The Prophets that have done it before.
Yeah.
So I know that they're from the Bible, but any message they're trying to give me is a little bit lost. But that's not the book's fault. It's just that I don't know anything about the Bible.
I just think it's really interesting. It really hit me because it was like the second book in 4 weeks in which that had been the case.
That's true.
And I'm really curious going forward to see like, is this a trend? Is this a thing we're doing?
Well, I was just listening to our Prophets episode today because I have a complex. And we were talking about wielding Christianity
as a weapon
in that. And it's just been like, going through my head a lot because we just talked and we just read Revival Season and it's very similar. I mean, the situations are
completely different. Yes. But Christianity is weaponized.
Yes.
In much the same way.
In contrast with a main character who like deeply loves it and really, truly believes in God. And that duality being really heartbreaking for her, especially because she's 15.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can tell because she so much starts in this place of idolizing her father and really believing in the mission.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to go out, we've got to save people and, right. and share the word of God with them. And she believes it so strongly. Mm-hmm. But of course, her dad is human. And on top of that, he's not a great one.
Correct. Yeah. We're all human and...
and some of us more than others. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just interesting that, you know, you're 15. Much like my experience with Teen Night at the Pool, your new things are happening. You notice different things. Your awareness of the world changes. I don't know. It's like her world is just kind of turned upside down.
Really quick. Actually, kind of slowly and then really quickly because it starts after an incident. Like she alerts us to something that happened in the past. I think she sets out to have a better year by, I don't want to say pretending it didn't happen, but by hoping she was wrong.
Yeah.
And so then that she wasn't wrong catapults us into the story. I mean, then like as you said, like things are happening a lot to her really quickly. Mm-hmm. Well, I had a question for you.
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about this with Monica, which you'll hear in a couple of weeks, listener. With our first two book club picks, there were some similarities in perspective and place.
Yeah.
You know, The Kindest Lie and The Prophets are told through various narrators and it's third person, and place is really important to the characters and to the story. Mm-hmm. With Revival Season, this is our first single narrator, first person novel, and the place is ever changing.
Yeah.
What did you think of that, especially in contrast to what we had read? And what are your thoughts on Miriam as the narrator?
I really liked Miriam, and I had a ton of empathy for her. I felt like she read to me as very authentically 15. Mm-hmm. I loved that how some aspects of being a 15-year-old girl were portrayed, and we talked a little bit with Monica about spoken and unspoken rules of being a girl. Mm-hmm. And I loved her relationship with her sister. I loved the exploration of really complex things for her. I love reading books about strong girls and women, and this was one of those.
It was especially because, like, I agree with you, and I think that I really loved Miriam as a character, and I felt, like, oddly protective of her reading it, and I really liked the hierarchy of her relationship with her siblings, too, because she is the oldest, but because of the fact that she's a girl and has witnessed something, her brother, who's the middle child, a lot of times read like the oldest. And I think that was totally intentional and to play with what it means to be the oldest. And I felt really, empathetic towards her. And I liked that she has this weird, this unbelievable strength in person that I think she would maybe think isn't because she's doing a lot of questioning and doubting.
Yeah.
But because she's been told her entire life that that is weakness.
Yeah.
When it's, I think it's an incredible strength. And I think that like choosing to question what you've been told is very much a sign of strength. And that resonated with me a lot. I like her a lot. I like her as a 15-year-old. And we also talked about this, just the two of us. We realized, okay, it's told in first person past tense.
Yeah.
Which gives me kind of a glimmer of hope that she's come out of this.
Yeah.
Like, how old do you think she is when she's telling the story?
You caught this, and I, again, last to the party. When you mentioned this to me yesterday, I was like, it was told in past tense? And Michael opened up the first page, and yes, in fact, right from the start, it's very clearly in past tense. So I am new to thinking about this, and I can't decide. I mean, she doesn't strike me as being like super old.
No, not even 30.
I mean, it's set in the 90s. So I don't know. Is it a situation where she's 15 in the 90s and today is today?
I could.
Like, is she 40?
I actually think it's maybe like right. And I'm deciding this as we're talking. I think that she's like maybe 17. Like, she's barely older than the narration.
Yeah. And
right?
I think that's possible.
So it's, I mean, I hadn't thought about the 90s thing. So it's like the story, she was 15 in the 90s, and the story is also, she's telling us a story in the past.
Yeah. Just the more recent past.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that's an interesting question. And we meant to ask Monica about that, and then we forgot.
Yeah, well, no one said we're professionals, least of all us.
Yeah, it is very interesting. And I agree, she's so strong. The other, when you talk about Christianity being a weapon, like she begins to doubt her father, doubt her faith. Then she realizes that she has a gift, and she kind of gets on surer footing about her religion in general, but her understanding conflicts with what she has been taught. You know, her father is a Southern Baptist preacher and everything that comes along with that.
Right.
And I don't know. The weaponizing doubt is so interesting to me because it's one of those, you know, it's how this happens in real life, because a church can be wonderful and uplifting and a social, you know, cog. And because doubt is described as a failure or the literal work of Satan, when you question things or when you say, well, that's fine, but my beliefs are slightly different, the only possible view of that is that, no, either you're weak or you're possessed by Satan.
Only two options.
There's nowhere to go with that.
Yeah.
But that's so much what we're facing even now. And I...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, as we're talking about this, it's making me reflect on Mrs. Cade.
Yeah.
And the part she plays, and it's also kind of offering me just a tiny bit of understanding for maybe the lack of stepping in that she might have done.
Yes.
If we're talking about a woman who...
Well, hold on. So for perspective,
yes,
if
please,
you have not read the book, Mrs. Cade is a midwife and friend of the family. And she has, by and large, birthed most of the children born in this evangelical community, casts a pretty wide net. So unlike most women, she works outside the home, and she's in and out of everybody's house. And she gets to see people in a more intimate way and in a more real way.
Absolutely.
Because she's in their homes in a time of, you know, having a baby is a big deal.
Yeah.
So she becomes aware. She's one of the first people, the only person, but the first person outside of her household who is aware of the abuse that Miriam's father is wielding on the family.
But she also believes Miriam's ability too.
Yes.
And tells her not to give up on it.
Yeah.
Right?
She does. And I think that's because, like, she's both a traditional member of this community and not.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. So that's my point, is that, like,
yeah,
I think she struggles with that a lot, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. Like we said, I could read a whole book about Mrs. Cade, because I think that part of the problem there is that she is trying to exist in both of those worlds. And probably must feel a lot of guilt for existing in both of those worlds because of the church. And I think that that is interesting and offers me just a little bit more understanding of her as a character. Because before when I was reading it, I was like, do something, please. Yeah. Like, Miriam's like, in a lot of ways, it's just a cry for help. And you basically give her a hug and say, keep doing what you're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Mrs. Cade is in a really tough place.
Yes.
Most women don't work, and she is working. And so not only is that how she's existing and feeding herself and all that, but it's also giving her a chance. I mean, her perspective is so much wider than anybody else she interacts with. But so is Miriam's.
Absolutely.
Most people don't go on, you know, a multi-state revival tour. You might go the next county's revival with your friends, and you go to, like, the four surrounding counties.
Right.
But it's not.
Yeah.
It's not a summer-long experience.
Everyone's part of the band.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's really interesting because they have that commonality, but both of their hands are tied because if they take it too far, mm-hmm. they will be shunned by their entire community.
I want to pivot and talk a little bit about Joanne. She is, like you said, kind of like represents like all women.
Yeah.
In the South in some way.
As much as one person can represent an entire population.
And like a very specific situation.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on her actions? And do you think she was doing the right thing?
She is. Mrs. Cade bothers me. And like you, I wanted her to do something.
Yes.
While also kind of understanding the other underlying situation. Miriam's mother is hard for me. Because as a mother, I can't imagine not protecting my children. Mm-hmm. But I'm also not a victim of abuse. Mm-hmm. And I know, because we know so much more about abuse and the cycle of abuse, that she's not really capable mm-hmm. of doing that in this situation.
Right.
And so it was really hard because a part of me wanted to come down hard on her and judge her. And then the other part of me was like, she's literally doing the best that she can. And the quiet moments when she shows Miriam another side of herself and she talks about the family they don't see anymore and what she was like as a young girl.
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of an unspoken way of saying there's one side of you that is who you are on the outside, and there's another side on the another part of you that's for you.
And that, like, doing protecting her children looked different than my idea of that.
Yeah.
And she showed us that by not leaving, because she had a moment where her sister comes to pick her up. She has a suitcase and is out the door.
Yeah.
And Miriam catches her and then she doesn't do it. And I think she had the presence of mind to know that they are only as safe as I'm around.
Yeah.
And that is sacrifice. And I think that ultimately, I agree. I think she isn't the problem. I mean, like, the Miriam's father is the problem.
Yeah.
So it's like, should she have done more? Like, he should not have been a jackass. You know what I mean? So I agree with you. I didn't lose patience with her. I didn't get angry at her, really. I just felt really horrible for her.
Yeah.
Which is why it's like, I love the ending of this book. And I also, I think that one of the things about why I love the ending is that we don't really know what happens.
Yeah.
But I have to imagine, maybe I'm just like speaking it into existence, that like these characters get a semblance of a happy ending.
Yeah. It is very interesting because the book is not particularly long.
No.
It's a slim book. And a lot of the conflict is subtle.
Yes.
And it's simmering. And you get to the end, and you and I both mentioned this. You get to the end and you're like, how are there 3-4 pages left? How I listened to the audio, like, how is there 7 minutes left? Because you start to feel, I mean, it's such a slow boil. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the end and you're expecting this giant explosion.
Yes.
What did you think about not resolving everything?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like sometimes a quote unquote unsatisfying ending is so satisfying.
Yeah.
And I think that it's oftentimes the only way to end certain stories because the pacing was so subtle in that, like, everything the whole time was simmering. It would have felt like a disservice to what Monica West was trying to do to make this explosive mm-hmm. finale or some sort of perfect conclusion or closure.
Yeah.
I mean, this is book club, so I'm not going to spoil it, but it really ends with, like, a question mark. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it doesn't end with an ending, and I loved that. There are a few times that it works, and I think that it works really well here because I think it just would have felt derivative to be done really in any other way.
Yeah. Sometimes when I read a book with a really open ending, I feel frustrated. And I'm like, did you just not know where to go with this? In this case, I felt like that rang true.
Yes.
Miriam's 15 years old. She's 15. The idea that she's going to exit this gracefully or have this figured out or whatever and resolve it.
Right.
Is unrealistic.
Right.
Her mother's already tried to leave once and failed. Like, there's just, it's not fair to have an expectation that when this blows up, it gets resolved.
Exactly. That everything is suddenly fixed and everyone's fine and we're moving on with our lives happily.
It's also, she's young. And so whatever happens at the end of this book is not ultimately what happens.
Exactly. It's not the end.
It's not the end.
Yes. But, I also think it was like a really great, I also think it paid homage to like who Monica West showed us Miriam to be. Mm-hmm. Who was very strong and was resilient. And I fully believe that she is stepping fully into herself off the page in the future.
Yeah, I agree. On our next episode, we will be joined by the author of Revival Season, Monica West. Through an odd set of circumstances, we recorded it yesterday.
Yeah.
But so I can tell you, it's a really great conversation. It definitely enhanced my understanding of the book.
Me too.
I can't wait for you guys to hear, I don't know, the backstory work.
Yes.
And the character development that Monica did on this book is amazing. Yeah. I don't want to spoil any of it because she's going to tell it better than I will. Her dedication to doing that and the purposefulness of a lot of her choices really shine through the plot. And it really, I don't know, I just love the book even more now.
Me too. I don't want to, like you said, like it's not out yet. So I don't want to say like anything else other than it really did. Like the minute we were done talking to her, I flipped through the book again because it just like totally changed my, not totally, but it offered me a new lens.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think what we have to say is come back in 2 weeks.
And so come back in 2 weeks. Jill maybe has an update about adolescent angst and romance. Probably not. Because we're recording the intro and outro after we hit stop. I can't wait.
I can't either.
Yeah. This is so fun. So we will have Revival Season up on our bookshop at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod. If you follow us on Instagram, you'll have already noticed all of our book club conversation topics. But if you haven't finished the book yet, go back and read them and think about them and ruminate. Because like we said, Monica West will be joining us in 2 weeks for a follow-up interview about Revival Season, which gets a little bit more spoilery than we were talking today for that reason.
Yes. I will also say, if you're nervous about listening next week because you want to read and you haven't yet, I would say we get 3/4 of the way through the episode before we talk about the ending.
Yes.
And we very clearly labeled it spoiler.
This is the ending. Yeah.
So you can listen to the beginning of absolutely. It without fear if you want.
Yeah. All right. This was fun as always, Jill.
It was. I'll see you later.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Birkett-Ragasey and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.